This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This is the Proud American Podcast, and I'm your host, Johnny Joey Jones. You know, some folks take a little time to warm up to. Others bring you coffee at 4:30 in the morning to warm you up the first time they meet you. That's exactly how I met country and rock music star and an all-around proud American, Tim Montana. From his music to his viral social media post to his American Thread sporting clay shoot, everything Tim Montana does has a ton of energy, and he puts it all into entertaining his fans and supporting companies and causes he believes in. And with that, Tim, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you for having me, man. You look like you needed coffee. You know, who wouldn't?
You know, this is how we met, so we might as well talk about it. But you're Mr. Interesting. There's a lot of things about you I want to talk about. But, you know, fast forward through some of the stuff we'll get to, and you do this American Threads event, and it's like really cool. So all your celebrity friends show up. We're in Nashville. You're shooting sporting clays, and you do it all to support the military. Why? Why put all that effort into that kind of cause?
I just always wanted to get very hands-on and help out. And it's something that's been close to my heart since I was a kid. I grew up in Montana, and I remember recruiters always coming to my house, and my mom would never sign any papers because I wanted to go when I was 17. And she always thanks God that she's like, you got distracted with music school. And, you know, I chose a different path, but now I kind of look back and I'm like, I still, you know, even though I didn't serve, I feel like it's our honor and our duty to serve those that served us. And meeting guys like you and that have, you know, been on the battlefield and stuff, you know, it's something that's very close to my heart. I'm very passionate about, and you can donate and help causes, but I'm like, what if I created my own thing and I could pick different causes, you know, to donate to? And it just became kind of took off and became a big thing, and with a lot of support from Fox and folks like you.
Is that kind of your personality? Like, I know a little bit about you. I've known you in real life for like a month. I followed you on social media for a really long time. We have some mutual friends, and the guys over at Black Rifle, I think, are some guys we know in common. And then at Fox, we know some folks in common. But is that your personality, like, rather than, like, just throwing money at it or, like, you got to go do it yourself? Is that who you are?
Yeah, I'm a pretty hyperactive person. Sometimes I bite out more than I can chew, but usually usually works out. But I'm very hands-on. I want to do things. I'm kind of a guy that wants to do things my way. Like, hey, here's what we do. You know, you give $5 a month for this. I'm like, no, let's do something different. Bring a helicopter. Let's raise a lot of money. You know, so I've always kind of done things my way, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent. Sometimes it works. And this is an example of how it works.
You know, the backup, I said, we'll talk a little bit more about your background. I really want to give people a chance to kind of hear your personality because you're just a great guy. You're fun to be around and bring energy and all that. I'll quit blowing smoke and just talk about you for a minute. You grew up in, I believe it's Butte, Montana, And you say off the grid. And when I read your bio or go to your website, it literally says in there, grew up without electricity. Is that right? Is that true?
Yep. Yeah, so we went off the grid when I was like 5, and it was lanterns, candles. I mean, there were some winters when the pipes would freeze and we didn't have water. So we'd have to go. I remember breaking ice in the creek at a very young age and getting 5-gallon buckets of water out, bringing it inside. Mom would boil it over the wood stove. And I have a lot more in common usually with folks' grandparents than I do folks my age, because I grew up like that. And I didn't know any different at the time. I thought it was just everybody lived like that. And then I look back and I'm like, wow, that was an interesting lifestyle choice.
What made that choice? Was it religious or just
kind of? Yeah, my mom was super religious, and I had a stepdad at the time that was kind of a paranoid. You know, there was a lot of interesting things going on in Montana in the 1990s that someday Fair I'll enough. Probably write a book about. I learned more about weapons at a young age than I did about music. And I'm like, wow, that was a scary lifestyle. But my mom, you know, that person is gone from our lives, and she still chooses to live that way. And she's 72 years old and still, you know, it's not lanterns, candles anymore, but there's no electricity. We have solar power. We have an outhouse. We have a generator. So, you know, it made it great for life on the road for me, because my coach that I tour in is like, last night I had to replace a sail switch on a propane heater because the heater went out in the boat. It's like, most musicians or people wouldn't know anything about using propane gas and stuff like that on a heater, but I grew up dealing with that kind of stuff in Montana. So,
no, I get it. I mean, like, by no means did I grow up without electricity, but I did grow up poor, and it's pretty close. And so we had like kerosene heaters in a single wide trailer. So I'm sure I'll die of some lung disease at some point in my life. And I don't even smoke cigarettes, but I get it. You know, it's, we'll call it humble beginnings. And I think what I love about it, and obviously that's a probably a positive and negative thing for you, but it definitely is a strength in your life now. But what I love is this irony or juxtaposition or just American thing, where you go from a guy who doesn't have electricity to a guy who makes his living with an electric guitar. And like, how does that transformation happen? And do you see that irony, or do you kind of not even think about it?
Oh, I think about it all the time, because it's, I always laugh. You know, of course I love playing acoustic guitar and campfire, but I joke, I'm like, man, I spent, you know, most of my life without electricity or an amp or an electric guitar. And I was like, guess what I'm going to play now? That's why I'm so loud, you know? And I didn't really get to hang out with other people when I was a kid, because we were kind of just in the woods, you know, not a lot of friends. We never really went to town. I didn't go to movies. I didn't go on dates, you know, until I was later in life, like late teens. So I think, you know, that, you know, not getting to see humanity in person and not hanging out with other humans made me want to go do the opposite. And I was supposed to have short hair when I was a kid, so now I've grown my hair out, my beard, I travel, I kick it with people all the time, and I just like meeting people very different from me. And you know, you think someone, oh, if you grew up in the woods you must be this way or that way, and it's like, no, I rebelled against all of that. Not that I don't love the woods, but I want to see the world, I want to meet humanity, I want to see people different than me and see how they eat, breathe, and sleep. And just, you know, humanity is just awesome to me.
You know, kind of coming back into society, I guess. And I don't mean to, like, you know, I'm not trying to add a narrative that ain't here. So if I screw something up or say something, that's not really how it was. You just let me know. Yeah, you know, I'm getting to know you and with my audience. But coming back into, I guess, civilization, people, you know, big crowds of people, big cities. Do you feel like you've learned something about humanity, about America, that maybe most people take for granted or never see?
I think so. I don't know how to so much put that in words, but I mean, I left Montana and I moved to Hollywood, California, and lived right off of Hollywood Boulevard. And that was my first experience with, you know, a large population of people. And it was my first experience with a microwave and a dryer. And my roommates were like, bro, are you a caveman? Cause I had never had a microwave in my life. And people don't think about that. It takes like 220 to run a dryer and stuff like that. So those are things, even when we had a generator, that we didn't have was a dryer and a microwave. And so like, I'd always put forks in there. So to this day, my wife will not have me heat up kids' food in the microwave, because at 36 years old, I still get defeated by it on a regular basis. Strange witchcraft you city people use.
That's so funny. I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you, I did not know there were microwaves with like different settings. Like you could hit a button just for popcorn. Like that blew my mind when I first bought a real microwave. So I kind of get it a little bit. I think that maybe that's the man in you as much as it is the off the grid. Maybe we just are clumsy and don't know how to use appliances very well anyway. We know how to fix them, but we don't know how to use them. Maybe, I don't know. So we're going to take a break real quick. And when we come back, I want to talk more about your music, because that's kind of your bread and butter.
Yep, you got it.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
All right. So we're back with Mr. Tim Montana from Montana. And when we talk about your music career, you got started in music. Like you said, you weren't around a lot of people. Kind of music was a way for you to get out, I guess, of the woods, as you would say, or the forest, and go into the world. But you met David Letterman, and you met him back in Montana. Is that right?
Yeah, that was my first big break. I'm looking at a tour poster right now in my rehearsal space office that says Tim Montana coming home tour. And I was 21 or 22 and I had three shows and I acted like I had a world tour. And those three shows, two of those were in Butte, Montana, and one of those was in Shoto, Montana. And so I'm like, we're going on tour. So I put together this ragtag group of musicians and we got in an old beat up Chevy van and we showed up in Montana and we played these shows. And I remember someone saying, you know, Dave Letterman lives near Shoto, Montana. And I thought to myself, and I think I said, I was like, man, I'll bet he shows up. And I'll bet he loves us and we could get on the late show. And it literally happened almost exactly like that. He showed up, he had his fiance with him, had a couple friends. I had my daughter who was like 6 months old at the time. And he came up, started talking to us. He was very interested in the off-the-grid living. My mom, you know, you won't talk to me for 5 seconds until she goes, oh, Timmy grew up off the grid. Did you know that? With her Butte accent. And so, of course, he was very intrigued by that, loved the family thing, and was playing with my daughter and just being really cool. And then, sure enough, like 2 weeks later, I get a call. Hey, Dave wants you on the late show. He wants you to be his personal guest. So not only did he invite us, he flew us up. We had a van that said Tim Montana on the front, CBS. And I was like, this is insane. And we played the late show and I was convinced that I was going to come home and my phone was going to blow up with agency offers, record deal offers. I'm like, this is it. And my wife and I, you know, had no money at the time, went out and splurged and bought steaks because we're like, all right, the calm before the storm. And the storm never came afterwards. I don't know if it was, you know, the performance, I still look back, it was a good performance, but it's like, we didn't have management. We didn't have a booking deal. But it was a really cool moment because he gave me that first taste of, you know, a big stage, like what, you know, playing a song for that many people. And it's like, that's something I think that really helped early on, even though I didn't spark and blow up and become a superstar overnight. I chased that feeling to this day, you know, like, wow, like started my career backwards, but I've been chasing that buzz ever since.
Well, I know I got a buddy in music who moved to Nashville, chased it for like 7 years. Finally, it was like, you know what, this isn't working out. Came back home, had some things happen, wrote an album, and it blew up, and he got signed. And so it's kind of that same thing. It's like you came back home at 21, but sometimes you got to move around a little bit and, like, take the second and third and fourth chance that comes along.
Yep. And there's been so many different opportunities that I think just some people are like that know my story. Like, how in the heck did that happen? How in the heck did this happen? So I just kind of wait for doors to open, and I walk through them full speed. Here we go.
So I guess from Montana to Hollywood is culture shock, but what was it like from Hollywood to Nashville? Did you feel more at home in Nashville? Is that where the music really took off for you, or how'd that work out?
Yeah. Hollywood to Nashville, you know, LA was weird. It was not, I knew that wasn't my jam. And so going to Nashville was kind of that mix between city life and you can drive 5 minutes and be in the woods with, you know, people that had Southern accents was strange to me. I've been locked in the woods my whole life. So I didn't know nothing but a good old fashioned Butte, Montana accent, but I'd like that, you know, but, yeah, it was a better thing for me. I could go hunting and all that stuff. And just kind of fell into this country scene, even though I've always been a country rock guy. But the musicians here. And so, yeah, so it was a nice adjustment. It was a nice kind of in between LA. Did we freeze in between LA and in between Montana? It's like a mix of that, you know?
Well, here you are. You've worked with and performed with and traveled with Kid Rock and ZZ Top, and you're kind of just killing it with music. And now you're doing more than that. I don't know how you absorb this term, but you're basically an influencer. Like, you show people what you're up to and what you enjoy doing. And because you're charismatic and authentic and genuine and honest and fun, they're like, you know what? I want to go do that too. And so tell me about some of that. Like, what are you into? What outside of music are you doing that's really getting people excited?
Yeah, that whole influencer game, ambassador game, I didn't even know was a thing until, you know, through Montana, I met the Nitro Circus guys. I met Street Bike Tommy and Travis Pastrana. And Street Bike Tommy said, dude, I work with this grill company. This is 5 or 6 years ago. Let me send you one of these Traegers. And I was like, okay, cool. So I started cooking on this grill. And they're like, I couldn't believe they sent me a grill that expensive for free. I was just blown away. I was like, wow, that cost more than my first car. And so, of course, I'm making videos, posting them, and then, you know, just segued into a paid thing, you know, and I didn't know that was a thing, nor did I know that that would make my career sustainable for the next 5 or 6 years. I mean, that literally paid that and other deals that came in through Black Rifle and Snap-on Tools and, you know, Indian Motorcycles and Polaris and these huge brands, you know. And I'm not a guy with like millions of followers, which still kind of baffles me, but I think I have an organic and natural way of doing it that works. And also some of the people that I influence and that I have ins with are, you know, some people that do have millions and millions of followers that kind of look at what I do as a tastemaker. And it's kind of been a weird thing. I haven't questioned it. I've just rolled with it, but it has to be authentic and it has to be me. So if it goes fast and it has a motor, I'm in. If it cooks meat, I'm in. You know, I probably couldn't do a tooth whitening company. I mean, you can't pay me to not be me, but I'm really good at just being me. Love it or hate it. Some days my wife would be on the latter side of that. But yeah, it's been that whole world. I mean, it's been incredible, and just being able to grow the following and grow my brand. And sometimes people that follow me don't know I play music in my record label now. It's like, hey, can you remind them you have an album out? I'm like, ah, long shots. That's right.
What's your favorite thing to cook on the Traeger? Or give us a secret. Like, what's some secret sauce, a recipe? Hook us up with something.
Man, I like cooking some deer back straps or elk back straps and like a coffee rub. And I cook it like roast style. I'll take a big chunk of that back strap and rub that in coffee and let that kind of smoke and slowly cook. And then, man, make some gravy, put it over some rice and slice that backstrap. Good God almighty. It is the best thing you've ever had. That's one of my favorites.
What kind of coffee? Like, I mean, I would imagine Black Rifle coffee, but like what blend or like you mean?
Right. So I've made my own, but honest to God, Traeger's rubs. And I'm not saying this because they pay me to, but their freaking rubs are, they're not over salty. Some rubs I try are so salty that you've got to use it sparingly. And with Traeger's rubs, they don't over salt them. So I see these guys, and maybe it's because they send us all this rub. People look at me funny, like, that's $6.99 a can, and I'm dumping a whole can on a But yeah, their rubs are great. So I use their coffee rub, and I've made my own coffee rub with Black Rifle, which is fantastic as well. But they got something secret going on in that coffee rub. And they won't tell me about it, but it's fantastic.
So you do some hunting and fishing still, or are you just so busy you don't have time for it?
Yeah, and the bummer is I got my first Montana elk tag this year since I was 18 years old.
Wow.
And it's sitting in my wallet right now. And because we're going on the ZZ Top tour, I don't think there's a window to go home and hunt. And I'm like,
whoa, my God. No, yeah. No. Listen, you have to figure this out. You cannot right. let that tag just sit. Number one, if you've got a second ID, I can grow a beard out and I will go as Tim Montana for Halloween and kill us an elk. How about that?
Yeah, if anyone listening has a private airplane, I'm going to need it at an airstrip somewhere on the ZZ Top tour. Some bearded gentlemen need to go shoot an elk.
And he's going to take his crippled buddy with him.
That's right.
Man, I do hope you have to check back in with me either through social media or come back on the podcast and let me know that you did find a way to go harvest that elk, because that's a big deal. That's not an easy tag to get, is it?
No, they changed the state laws, which I thought was really cool of them to do. If you're born or raised there, if you have property there, or if you have, you know, but you have to be born there. And if you can prove all that and you still have family there, which I have a ton, all my family's there, then you get first pull on elk tags over out-of-staters, which I'm like, that's pretty cool. You let the guys that grew up there, were born there, you know, hunt there first. So
no, that's unique.
And then I pull a tag and don't use it. You're like, yeah, you jerk.
Well, that is cool, because most states it's the opposite, because it's the export factor, right? They want out-of-staters to come in and spend money, which that makes sense. That's what pays for habitat, but that's really cool that they've done that. And here you are, not taking advantage of it.
I know. Work got in the way of it, man.
You work too much. That's what it is. Well, I think, you know what? Yeah. I think the band will understand. You guys are just going to have to come up with a stop in Billings or maybe even Bozeman or somewhere like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But the tour is going to be good. And then Billy and I have our sauce company that's rocking and rolling right now. We're getting into some major retail stuff with our Whisker Bomb products. So me and Billy came into my life in 2013. It's just kind of been that father figure I never had, and just a great guy and a collaborator. And he's moving down the street in Nashville, so I'm going to get to see more of him.
That's awesome. You're talking about Billy.
Billy Gibbons.
Yeah, Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top. Yeah.
Yep. So.
Well, man, I'll tell you what. It's been a fun conversation. I think the audience knows a lot more about you. They probably know why people talk so well about you now, because you're fun to talk to. And you got a big heart, and you do good things for good people. I learned today we have another group of friends in common with Travis and them. Another amazing, energetic guy. If we put you and Travis Pastrana in the same room, it's like in movies, like when the light bulbs glow, it's like the energy coming out of you guys would probably like bust the light bulbs. I mean, like, that's just a lot of, like, you know, you guys just kind of sit on idle and you're just waiting to go do something.
He made the shoot last year. The first annual American Thread shoot, Pastrana came, and him and I got on stage afterwards after hitting the bar. And oh my God, we were like, okay, guys, you need to calm her down a notch.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and what happens at the American Thread shoot must need to stay at the American Thread shoot, right, too, I guess.
Or put it on Fox.
Yeah, or we'll put it on Fox. But, well, man, thanks for coming on. Thanks for all you're doing. Give you this last chance to just tell folks how they can keep up with you, how to, you know, if you want to activate them for what you got going on or a good cause, just kind of let folks know how to get involved with Tim Montana.
Yeah, just pretty much at Tim Montana on any of them social handles. I pay good money to get those from random other Tim Montanas, so it's worth it. Check it out. And timmontana.com, got a new record out, Long Shots. Check out Whisker Bomb Products, Big Sky Cigars. Let's go, baby. Come on.
Thanks for coming on, brother.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate you.
Tim Montana is the American story, from living without electricity to using social media, music, and technology to influence and connect Americans coast to coast. He embodies what it means to work hard, play hard, and be a proud American. Thanks, Tim, and keep on rocking, brother. To hear more stories like this, visit foxnewspodcast.com. And be sure to check back next week for a brand new Proud American story. I'm Johnny Joey Jones, and thank you all for listening.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.